Welcome to episode 406 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And wow, do we have a lot of feedback and news in this episode.
Yeah, you know what, Richard? I really learned something important about our listeners this week. And that is that while Windows Media Center may be teetering on the brink of death, our listeners, they've apparently all moved on to TiVo.
Yeah, they all have TiVos now.
We got so much feedback from you guys in response to a question from last week where a user was trying to figure out what to do with his TiVo, and maybe he could use that to access that from a vacation home. We're not going to read through all of it verbatim because we got a ton and we cannot thank you enough for that. So instead, we're just going to kind of give you guys the highlights of everything that we received from all of you. Now, most of this feedback was sent into our inbox. entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com is the email address for you to send us some of your own feedback. Richard, why don't you kick things off with all of this TiVo feedback?
All right. So first off, we have a message from Brennock, and I'm going to summarize this. Brennock confirmed that the TiVo does not allow you to stream or transfer to TiVos on the same account in two different locations. So you may remember Rod's situation. Rod, the listener who wrote in last week, is that he has a vacation home and he's trying to outfit it for television viewing, and he uses the TiVo over the air DVR in his home, and he wanted to find out what his options might be. So I was curious if it was possible on the same account to transfer or stream between TiVos in different locations. You can do it on the same network, but not on the same account across networks. So thank you, Brennick, for that information. Brennick also recommends a couple different options to consider as a way to help solve this problem. One, to maybe pick up another over-the-air TiVo with lifetime service for the vacation home and look for specials. And every once in a while, Dave Zatz and other folks post about specials where you can get that for as little as $150, including the lifetime, which is a pretty good deal. So that's something to check out and consider. Of course, that doesn't address the remote content issue, but it would potentially allow him to record things that he and his household may be interested in watching while they're at the vacation home. Now, another thing that Brennick recommended is a very popular program called KMTTG. And KMTTG is a server, basically, that you set up on a PC, and it allows you to save off TiVo content for access in any way that you choose. It converts the content and lets you get to it in pretty much any way that you want. So that's something pretty cool to consider, and not something that I have implemented myself. So I don't have a whole lot of experience with it, but there's a lot of information online that you can get about this. And finally, Brennick recommends that he could always also save out copies of the shows to a laptop. Again, this would be using KMTTG, and that would allow him to just put them on the laptop and take them with you. But if you have the KMTTG server, you could, in theory, put that content on your Plex server, and you could access that remotely. So lots of options for you there. That is one of like 17 messages we got about this. So next, Jose weighs in, and Jose says that Rod mentioned he's using his TiVo with an antenna, which means that he's either using the Romeo over the air or the base Romeo model, and neither support streaming as a standard feature. Really good point, because nowadays we're used to the idea that any TiVo lets you stream. Not the case. So with these over-the-air TiVos, he would need to purchase a TiVo Stream, which is a separate device, in order to be able to do any streaming in or out of the home. And the TiVo Stream would allow him to stream his recorded shows to an Android or iOS device, but he wouldn't be able to Chromecast it. So the Android application does not allow Chromecasting, and I did confirm that myself. One thing that's interesting to note about the TiVo Stream, you can still find it in various retail outlets, but you cannot find it on TiVo's own website, which makes me wonder, are they going to still support this going forward? There are mentions of the TiVo Stream all over the TiVo website, but there's no actual TiVo Stream available for purchase on the TiVo website. So you'll need to check around, and you can probably find stuff on eBay or find stuff in other retailers where you could purchase that. Another option, because I believe we found out that Rod uses an iOS tablet, is that if he can get the content to stream to his iOS device, or if he can download it to his iOS device from the TiVo application, again, you'd still need that stream device to make that work, then you can, in fact, AirPlay from the TiVo app to an Apple TV. I did not know this. This is kind of surprising to me, but it works with normal AirPlay. So if you have something on the TiVo app, you can AirPlay it to an Apple TV, and you can either get an original original Apple TV, like the second and third generation that you can AirPlay to, which is relatively inexpensive through a variety of retailers, or you could potentially purchase the newer one that has all of the additional apps, depending on what you prefer there. Now, Jose continues, and he says, there is a solution, although it can be a complex, and it can be complex, though it's highly reliant on a solid internet connection on both ends. And this is basically to set up VPN. I want to note that listener and friend of the show, John, also suggested this, and he proposed that the Tunneler version of the Anana box, which is basically VPN in a box, might actually work for this. So he says, first, you'd need to set up a router-side VPN server at the primary home. So basically, you have a VPN server running out of your main home. And then he says, you'd then have the router at the vacation home connect to the primary home's VPN as a client. And what this does is it bridges the vacation home to the primary home, and any device in the vacation home would be the same LAN network as the primary home. At that point, you'd be able to connect something like a TiVo Mini, or even be able to use streaming applications locally over your network at the vacation home that would then connect to the Romeo and not only be able to access the recordings, but live television as well. He says, as you can imagine, this can be pretty bandwidth intensive, so it requires a consistent connection to maintain the VPN connection and the data being transmitted. It's a bit of work getting everything set up, but if you can maintain that connection, the solution definitely works. So if VPN is something that you are comfortable with and something that you'd be interested in giving it a try, then this might be a good solution for you. Continuing on, we also heard from Larry, who said, you know, you might want to consider TiVo Online. TiVo Online lets you not just manage, but also view your recorded shows online through a web browser. It's a capability available through TiVo's website. Again, though, you would probably have to have the TiVo Stream device in your home to be able to use the TiVo Online viewing capabilities. So something to consider there. And Larry also put in a vote for KMTTG, suggesting that that might be a good solution. So, wow, our listeners are into the TiVo.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I like, first off, one more time, again, thank you guys for all of the feedback. It was an overwhelming amount of feedback to get ready for the show. I'm kind of surprised that multiple people suggested the VPN option, because that is really complicated. And boy, it's not the one that I would recommend. And you, like Jose said, you do have to have a pretty beefy internet connection, at least, well, especially on the primary home side, to be sending that back and forth, and probably on both sides, because if you're just doing what it is intending to be across your local network, I'm guessing it's not doing any compression. It's probably doing full MPEG-2 streams, which those can be 18 megabits a second. So you better have some really fast internet at both places. And I would think that most people who are paying for internet at a vacation house aren't paying for really expensive internet because they're not there all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that option is going to work the best. I really like the options that lead to a Plex server. It doesn't have to be Plex. Obviously, we talk about Plex all the time. It could be MB, it could be Kodi, it could be any of that stuff. But those options, I think, are your better bet in terms of something that's going to be a little bit more reliable, but it's still going to be a fair amount of setup because you've got to do the work with that tool that has six or seven letters in it or whatever, KMTTTTG or whatever it is, and get all that set up and working. But once you do, it's probably going to be worth it. And you'll have the side benefit of it's not just going to work at your vacation house. It'll work anywhere because there are mobile apps for those things too. So if you're on a cruise or you're on a vacation to somewhere that isn't your vacation house, all of that stuff would still be accessible. So, dude, guys, seriously, thank you so much for all of the feedback. You guys are the reasons that we keep doing the show because the community is amazing. You guys help each other so much. So thank you for all of those great, great suggestions for us to pass on. Now, that wasn't it. We've got other things to talk about from you guys before we even get to the big news from the week. All right. So we'll try to get through these a little bit faster. First up, this one is from Henry. I'm going to break this up into two because he has two questions. He says, I recently purchased a 55-inch LG TV. It's a 2016 model, thinking that it had a higher refresh rate than 60 hertz. But when I connected it to my desktop PC, the NVIDIA control panel said it was 60 hertz. Do you know if there is a 40-plus inch TV out in the market that the PC would recognize as a 120 hertz or 240 hertz, basically anything other than 60 hertz? Henry didn't tell us what specific model LG TV was that he bought. I would guess that NVIDIA control panel is not incorrect in this. I only have a 60 hertz monitor connected to my computer that has an NVIDIA graphics card in it. But if that's what NVIDIA is telling you have, it probably is what you have. There's lots of TVs out there, especially ones that are bigger than 40 inches, that have a higher refresh rate than 60 hertz. They're going to be pricier, obviously, but there's tons of them. And I can't think of any reason why NVIDIA would tell you otherwise. So I guess do a little bit of digging to see if NVIDIA is just flat out lying to you, if other people have experienced the same thing. And then I guess the other question is, if NVIDIA is lying to you and you're sure that you do have a 120 hertz TV, does it matter? Like, is it still working appropriately, or is your GPU doing weird things and messing it up? That's what I would like to know. And Henry, if you could, I'd love to know the model number of the TV that you've got here.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I was wondering the same thing. I was wondering, even does his card have the ability to see anything beyond 60? So everything above that would just register as 60.
Hmm. I didn't think about that. I guess that is an option, but it's never been a situation that I've even thought of.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't drive anything more than that, then that might be how you just see, and the only option that you would get, no matter how good the refresh rate is on the monitor itself. So yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of guessing at this point.
No, that makes total sense because it's your graphics card that's doing all of the work to send out your picture at something higher than 60 hertz. So yeah, if you've got some low end entry level, maybe it's an onboard sort of NVIDIA graphics card, then maybe it's just not possible. maybe you need something higher. And he doesn't tell us what his graphics card is either, but you know, maybe if he were to buy like a GTX 1050, they're about $100. You know, they're not screaming video cards, but they're good enough for some games. Probably supports more than 60 hertz output. So yeah, that's a good option too. So Henry, if you can't figure this out, let us know what your TV model is and what your GPU is. His other question is, he says, Dolby Atmos was a big thing at this year's CES, but most brands that showcased them were for the living room and not a PC room. And I'm curious if you've heard of or know of any PC solution for speakers with Dolby Atmos built in, like maybe a Razer Leviathan 2, possibly. So one quick thing. I honestly, despite the fact that I'm into PC gaming and I'm familiar with some of Razer's products, I had never even heard of the Leviathan. It's a gaming branded or marketed soundbar for your PC. And they do surround sound versions of this stuff. I mean, I've heard of surround sound setups for PCs. They don't seem super common, but they exist. I honestly haven't heard of anything that's planning to do this. Geez, like my very first thought was, I guess get a receiver, but that's going to be a lot of money to get a Dolby Atmos receiver plus all of the speakers. But right. I don't know what kind of markup Razer is charging for these types of high-end surround sound setups either. Have you heard of anything, Richard?
I have not. And, you know, we know that for the Dolby Atmos plugin, you need to spend $15 if you want that in Windows. And that is, you know, that's just the software piece. If they do any licensing for hardware implementations, I can't imagine that anything like this would necessarily be cheap. So I suspect we're probably too early for this. I think it's going to be a while until we see products that are addressing this. You're right. There are solutions that address speaker systems for PCs, particularly surround sound. Usually they're just 5.1 solutions, though.
Right, right. Yeah, probably not even very many 7.1 solutions.
Yeah, I don't even know of any.
So to end up with like a 5.1.2 or 5.1.4 or something like that, you might be waiting a while. But Razer is a good company to watch for that sort of thing. Absolutely, because they're all over that space.
All right, the next message is from Peter, and he has some information that he was kind of following along with our last episode with both of us. So first, he says, while listening to Richard, episode 405, explaining the new spatial sound option in the Windows 10 Creative Update, I decided to follow along since I was using a Windows 10 PC with the update with Bluetooth headphones. I could see that the option was on by default and set to Windows Sonic. Richard's explanation was so good that I could download the Dolby Atmos version and change it as he was talking. The sound quality changed instantly. I accepted the 30-day free trial, then listened to the rest of the podcast in much improved sound quality. Well done. He also says, I then decided to follow Josh's instruction and change my Xbox avatar to the picture I've been using for years in Microsoft, but I loaded the wrong one, and when I went to change it back, I was notified that I had already used my one free change, and it would now cost me for a second change. Wow.
Yeah, I think he might be mistaken there. Microsoft does charge you to change your gamer tag if you're going to change it more than once, but I just can't imagine that they would be charged, and I haven't tried this yet because I don't want to change to a gamer picture. But I didn't see this email until a couple hours before the show. But I just can't imagine that they're making people pay to change their gamer pick more than once. I'm thinking that depending on what method Peter chose to change it, that maybe it also thought that he was trying to change his gamer tag. And it's not cheap. It's $10 every time you want to change your gamer tag. after the first time,
yikes,
which I think is kind of insane. I don't understand. Yeah. Like, I kind of understand why they charge, because they want to discourage people from constantly changing names. And there's probably some like amount of time where, like, if I were to change mine, where they would make it unavailable for other people to pick my gamer tag. So there's probably some amount of stuff to support, I guess. But I think the bulk of it is just they don't want people changing their gamer tags all the time. So if they charge money for it, people are going to be less likely to do it. But $10 is kind of crazy. It's not a ton of money, but it's still kind of crazy.
It is.
I guess double check. I mean, try changing your gamer pick again. If you're in the Alpha Insider ring on the Xbox One now, like as of yesterday, we're recording this Tuesday, May 2nd. I think as of yesterday, they rolled out this functionality on the Xbox for Alpha Ring Insiders. So if you're in that ring, you can try this from your Xbox and maybe get a different experience there. If you were trying on a Windows 10 PC, maybe try on a phone like an Android or an iOS phone. I just can't imagine that they're charging for gamer pick changes. All right, our next piece of feedback is not via email. This one came in from good friend of the show, Keith, via Twitter. He sent us a message saying that he was speaking with an Xfinity tech, I believe that's Comcast Xfinity, and the tech told him that Seton was out of business. Out of business. I don't think this is true. Like, this couldn't have been true. We're friends with the guys from Seton. And so we reached out to those guys. And while waiting for a response back, I went and checked things like, is their website still up? Yes, of course their website is still up. How about Amazon? Are their products still listed? If they are, who are they being fulfilled by? Well, their products are still listed, and they're being fulfilled by Seton. So we did hear back from the guys at Seton, and they said, I don't know why Comcast would say that. We're not out of business, as is clear by the fact that we still support our products. And if Comcast or any other cable company is giving a customer a difficult time, then the customer should contact our support team to help get it resolved. And Seton has always had great customer support. So Keith, I'm not sure why you were told that by a Comcast tech, but they're wrong. And I'm happy they're wrong. But obviously, Seton not exactly producing a lot of things for us home theater PC enthusiasts of late.
Right. But also, I mean, we know that they branched out into the hospitality space and into other areas. So consumer was only one aspect of that company's business. Now, I have a theory here, and my theory aligns with something that Dave Zatz retweeted, where someone had posted on Twitter that when they were talking with their cable company, they were saying that, oh, well, we're phasing out cable cart. So I think, and there's no evidence to suggest that that is true either. Right. I think that this is the usual cable company BS, where they don't want to support cable card. They want to push you to, and oh, by the way, who's behind the new extremely highly popularized X1 service? Oh, right, Comcast. They want you to get their box and use their service. They don't want you using cable card devices.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we of course don't think that cable card is long for this world. It is something that the cable industry is trying to get rid of. And frankly, even us who have had cable card tuners, and Richard still uses one for crying out loud, we'd all like to see a better solution, but that doesn't mean that we should go around spreading rumors that Seton is out of business and that Comcast isn't supporting cable card tuners anymore. And I'm not saying that Keith is spreading this rumor. He just wanted to let us know so that we could dig into this. But other people are, like this Comcast tech. So not cool, not cool at all.
Yeah. Definitely not cool. All right. One final piece of feedback. This came via Twitter. And on Twitter, Twitter handle Clivens, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it because I think the guy's name is Clive, reports that he's in the UK and he's having the same problem with his Plex DVR where the guide data is not downloading. He says the guide data tries to download TV listings and gets to about 60 or 70% and gives up with no additional information. And I will follow up on this a little bit in my entertainment center update this week because the problems aren't gone.
Not good. All right. That's it for all of our listener feedback. Boy, that was a lot, but it was great. So if you want to, you can shoot us an email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or like Keith and Clive or whatever his name actually is, did, you can follow us on Twitter. The website is at DigiMediaZone, or you can hit Richard and I up directly at Josh Pollard or at Richard Gunther. Like, that was enough listener feedback that could be a show, but Microsoft had better ideas, and instead, they decided to hold some big event today. So we should probably cover that before getting out of here. And I kind of feel like we were tricked going into this event. We knew that it was going to be an event focused on education.
And did we? They said that it was going to be focused on education. I feel like that was an excuse.
There was a lot of education stuff in the first third. I'd say the first third of this event.
Yes.
But if Panos Panay, spoilers, if Panos Panay didn't talk so much, it would have been more like the first half. But that dude can talk. But that's okay. So it was an education event. But even that, we were like, oh, well, we know what this is going to be. We know that they're going to announce Windows 10 Cloud and that it's going to be targeted at education and Chromebooks. And that was mostly true, except it's not called Windows 10 Cloud, which, thank God, because that's a terrible name for it. Instead, we do have a new version of Windows 10, and it's called Windows 10 S.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is a dumb name. Like, they never really said what S actually stands for. It could be store, and I'll get into why. But they immediately after unveiling the name started throwing out S words, like it's streamlined and it's simple and it's secure and it is the soul of Windows.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Oh, it's such baloney. We don't actually know what it means, but what it is basically the same version of Windows 10 that you're all probably using, except that it will only allow you to install apps from the store. Now, that means they can be UWP apps, of course, but they could also be more traditional desktop-y apps that have been ported to the store using what Microsoft calls the Project Centennial Bridge, which is really just a way to like wrap a regular desktop app up inside of a little bit of a UWP skin.
Right, that's exactly what it is. It's a UWP wrapper. That's all it is. It's like wrapping a web app in a real application framework. This is essentially wrapping a desktop app in a UWP app framework.
Hey, as a web developer, I don't like you saying wrapping a web app in a real application framework. Web apps are real apps too. Anyway, so that's what this is. It's Windows 10 that will only allow you to install apps from the store. If you try to open up your browser and try to download an app and then try to run it, or I imagine if you pulled an EXE off of a USB thumb drive or anything like that and try to run it, it's going to give you a message saying, nope, sorry, you can't install this. It's not verified secure by Microsoft. You should go to the store. And in some cases, I thought this was insane. In some cases, it'll say, you know, this looks like a photo editing app. Maybe you should go to the store and download Photoshop.
It's Clippy for your apps.
Yeah, it's ads for apps is really what it is. And I guess as a developer, if they're going to give my app free ads, I guess I'm okay with that. But as a user, I don't know. Like, I can see the side where a lot of people be like, oh, I don't need more ads. But these are useful contextual ads. you know, if you're trying to find a photo editor, then having a photo editor suggestion makes sense. And that doesn't feel like, that doesn't feel bad or sleazy or gross to me. Are you okay with that?
No, I feel exactly the opposite. I don't like this at all.
Richard feels sleazy and gross.
Yeah, but we digress a little bit, right? I mean, because this is actually really interesting. This is a new version of Windows that is designed to work on entry level products. I don't want to say stripped down, but it is a trimmed kind of like, kind of like Terry himself. It is a trimmed down version of all that is Windows.
It is, but well, is it really? They didn't really say anything that made me think that it's a trimmed down version.
Well, I can tell you how is a trimmed down version. If you want the ability to run actual desktop apps on it, then you need to upgrade your version of Windows 10 S to Windows 10 Pro, which you will be able to do. And you can do that either for free or after the end of the year, you'll have to pay $50 to do that, which is really, you know, I'm saying like that's a big deal. It's not a big deal. $50 to upgrade to a Windows Pro license that gives you full desktop access. So what this means is this is Windows without the desktop, which how is this not Windows RT in a new skin?
It is similar to Windows RT in a new skin, but the base operating system is way better than Windows RT was, right? We can at least agree on that Windows 10 is way better than Windows RT.
We can agree on that. I mean, there are a couple things that feel very similar, right? They're pushing the store. This is going to be a protected, sandboxed ecosystem, which is probably a good thing, particularly if they're targeting the education market. You want to control the equipment and the security of the devices as much as you can. This would allow organizations with students to do that. And it also kind of, you know, simplifies the whole process. It keeps people from being able to put all of these random things that haven't been vetted onto their devices. So all that is good. And if you may remember, I was a fan of Windows RT. I thought that the Windows tablets that came out should have had Windows RT and nothing but Windows RT because it was a great system for tablets. What they've done is they've taken all of the good stuff from that and from Windows 10 and basically put it on any device, laptop, tablet. You could probably even put this on a regular old computer. I don't know if they're going to be offering that or not, but it would run.
Yeah, I would think that would be a possibility. I think that part of the reasoning for this and part of the thing that kind of makes this okay is this seems clearly targeted at Chromebooks. Chromebooks are really big in education. Microsoft doesn't want Google Chromebooks to be winning the education space. They want kids to be raised on Windows because they want people to use Windows, but also because that's what people in the real world use.
Right.
I use I know Apple, you know, some people do use Apples and Mac OS and stuff, but the vast majority of people in their day job are using Windows PCs, not Chromebooks.
Right.
That doesn't make sense. But Chromebooks do work in the education space and frankly, in more spaces than that, because most people are predominantly using web apps.
Right.
And if that's true, then a version of Windows that has, you know, full access to web apps, because I don't care what you or anybody else says, Edge is a pretty stinking good browser. And the vast majority of those web apps that people are using from Chromebooks or anything else will work just fine in Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And for other things, you do still have the Windows Store. You'll have Microsoft Office, which blows away Google Docs and all the other Google-y Office competitor stuff. Like, that all makes sense. And then the other big thing especially from the education perspective and from the kids are using computers perspective, is they can't muck these up. If they can't install you know, inadvertently, malware and viruses and all this other crap on these PCs, it makes it way easier for schools to maintain these things. And schools don't have big budgets for huge IT departments. They want, you know, they want some part-time IT guy to be able to set up all of these things for the whole school at the beginning of the year, hand them out, and be done and not have to worry about it for the rest of the year.
Right.
That's why Chromebooks have, that's one of the reasons why Chromebooks have been so successful. And it sounds like you could absolutely do this with Windows 10S and get all of the same features. One of the reasons that I loved Windows RT and hoped that RT would really take off is, Richard, I'm sure you experience this, and I'm sure that every one of our listeners experiences this. You go to your family's house for the holidays, for Thanksgiving, whatever it is, and they're like, oh, hey, it's Richard. He knows computers. I bet he can help fix my computer. And their computer is all screwed up because they got all this junk installed. Well, if they were running Windows RT or Windows 10S, none of that would have even been possible. And now you don't have to be the holiday IT guy.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah, no, that totally does sound great. Now, what I worry about, because they also announced that because this is targeted toward any computer, entry-level computers, that they've also partnered with a bunch of manufacturers to make computers that specifically come with this new operating system on board, and that you can get those at the tablet range for as low as $189, and then obviously they're going to go up as they you're looking at laptops and other devices. But are those manufacturers, you know, they're not going to be able to necessarily bunge it all up with stuff that's going to slow the machine down, but are they going to install things that are still, in my opinion, considered crapware, the same way that Lenovo and HP and others muck up any Windows tablet that you buy?
That's a really good question. I have no idea. Like, would any crapware that they pre-install need to be a UWP or something from the store? It seems like it would kind of need to be, but maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know.
That is a really great question. No idea. And I guess we'll have to wait until these things are released later this year, which should be this summer, before we know for sure. But yeah, that's a great question. All right, a couple of other quick education-based things to point out, because these are kind of interesting. And I know we've got IT people that are listening to the show. And one of them is, Microsoft has for a long time had a PC management tool called Intune, and it allows IT administrators to remotely control and maintain and manage PCs across an entire network. And Microsoft has done a bunch of stuff to make Intune be able to very easily manage these types of PCs in these types of environments, you know, quickly being able to set up like classrooms full of computers, you know, or grade levels and all of these different groupings and stuff. And then also being able to very easily say, you know what? None of these kids should have access to the camera and the laptop. And it's like one click of a button, cameras are disabled for everybody, period. There's no getting around it. Like, you don't have a camera and you don't have to worry about that anymore. And that's really, really smart. And I know the Chromebooks have some of that, but I bet it's nowhere near the functionality that the Microsoft tools provide, because they've been doing it forever. You know, this has been something that Microsoft has needed to do for 20 years.
Yep.
Chromebooks have only been around for a few. So I think that's really cool. And then another really neat thing, of course, Microsoft owns Minecraft. Minecraft is huge. It's also getting really, really big in the education space. There's even a Minecraft education version. Minecraft for Education, I think, is what it's called. And Windows 10S cloud books, or whatever the crap they're going to call these things, are going to come with a free year subscription to Minecraft for Education, which is neat. But they're also doing something else. They're updating Minecraft Education to include a code builder thing. And that means that you're going to be able to write code inside of Minecraft to make Minecraft little bots do things for you. It's teaching programming inside of an environment that kids love.
Right.
And there's multiple ways to do it. There's a UI where it's dragging blocks around, very similar to Scratch. It's great for absolute beginners. You can switch to actual like scripting language type stuff for the more advanced programmers. I think this is really, really great and could really go a long way towards helping STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and math. So yep. That's all really, really great.
Cool stuff. Awesome stuff. And I think, you know, I don't want that to be missed. A lot of people think, oh, Minecraft, yeah, that's this thing that kids play. This is such an education opportunity. And the fact that they're leveraging it for that and thinking of this as a platform for education is smart, smart, smart.
Absolutely. So was Windows 10 S the biggest news, or was this next hardware the biggest news?
Right. Well, it kind of depends, right? And this is why I feel like this event was an excuse, because we had every reason to expect that they were going to announce hardware. And in fact, just before the event, in fact, there were leaks about the hardware that they were releasing. They didn't have all the details, but they had some leaked images and some information. And sure enough, we have a new Surface laptop. You know what I would not call this, Josh?
What?
I would not call this a clamshell.
Really? What would you call this?
I just think this is a convertible, because isn't it the kind of laptop that you can actually like totally turn around and use as a convertible?
I don't think so.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't even think it folds perfectly flat.
Oh, okay. Somehow I missed that. I thought it was, but okay. All right.
Yeah. So, where do we start with this?
Let's talk about this. First of all, they start with a video, right? They had another emotionally charged, high-tech component kind of construction and device interior video. And wow, this thing is beautiful.
It is absolutely that. I mean, we're used to Surface devices being beautiful, but this is the pretty... is it prettier than the Surface Studio? It might be prettier than the Surface Studio.
Oh, yeah.
It is an absolutely gorgeous laptop. Pretty is one thing, but pretty only gets you so far in the world of laptops. So let's talk about what it actually is. This thing's got a 13.5-inch screen. It's that 3:2 aspect ratio that's on the Surface Pro and the Surface Book. So they say it's comparable in size to a 14-inch, but it feels more like a 13-inch display.
I'm not entirely sure how that's good, but okay. Compare it to 14, but it feels smaller.
Well, like it's a smaller form factor like in your bag, which is cool. But when you're looking at the display, the screen looks bigger. So that's good, I guess. It supports the pen. And then in terms of like actual hardware specs that matter, you know, what do we have for processor, RAM, storage, all that stuff? Core i5, Core i7, RAM options start at 4 gigs. There's an 8 gig option. There's a 16 gig option. We're not going to go into all of the options because they're weird. Microsoft is always weird with their Surface offerings.
Right.
You know, if you want 16 gigs of RAM, but only an i5, you're out of luck. That sort of craziness. And then it's got an SSD, of course, but it's using PCI Express SSD. So it's even faster than regular SSD.
Nice.
And it uses even less battery power. Okay, so that's all good, I guess. Like that's all what we'd expect. And it's also the latest Intel processor. It's Kaby Lake. So that's good to see.
Yep.
But the other thing that matters is ports. What kind of ports do we have on the side? And the industry has been moving in a big way towards USB-C, Thunderbolt 3, that sort of stuff. And this is where I think Microsoft dropped the ball in the biggest way with the Surface laptop. It has one USB 3 port, one mini display port, a headphone jack, no USB-C, and I don't think it has an SD slot.
It does not. It does not. Yeah, so that's it. USB 3, mini display, and headphone, and I think a proprietary charger port.
Right. The Surface Connect port that we've had on the last Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book, which means that it works with the Surface Dock. And I think that's probably why they did that. At least that's the like giving them the benefit of the doubt reason for why they did that. But this is kind of not good. Like they talk about this is a laptop that you can give your student before they go off to college and they can use it all through college. This thing will last them for 4 years through college. I don't know, man. No USB-C, no Thunderbolt 3. It's a little disappointing.
That is, but you know, it is the trend we're seeing. We're seeing devices move away from multiple ports, even moving away from port options. I mean, Apple got a whole lot of crap when their Pro machine came out with nothing but USB-C ports on it. And if you want anything else plugged into that, you have to get an adapter. And the same is going to be true with this machine. If you want an SD card, you need an adapter. If you want more than one USB, you need an adapter. What I'm disappointed about is that it is USB 3 and not USB-C, which they could also have used as a charging option.
Yeah, but if they were going to do that, then they better make sure there's more than one. Unlike the original MacBook. But the thing is that there are other PCs that are doing this better. You know, the high-end HPs have multiple USB-C ports, and I think some of them have USB-C and USB 3. So there are competitors that are doing this better.
There are.
And this is a premium laptop.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, every one of those additional ports, it takes space and it takes battery life and it takes licensing costs to implement and hardware costs. So there is a reason for not doing it. Now, I don't have am I happy with this? No, not necessarily. But this is a trend that we're seeing. Now, I talked about battery. Here's where my jaw hit the floor. They are saying that this laptop will get you through your school day, get you through your homework or study group, and then get you through a little bit of personal time because it's going to allow you 14 and a half hours on a charge. That is crazy.
Yeah, and they did make they made sure to point out that there isn't any MacBook that gets that kind of battery life.
No, there's not. I mean, I don't know of any laptop that does without an add-on battery, frankly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's something out there that's like enormous, but not something that weighs 2.7 pounds.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, amazing.
So the other thing that's neat about this is the keyboard. They did this whole Alcantara, or however the heck you pronounce that, fabric covering over the keyboard. So it's super nice. It's super nice, you know, just like the Surface Book has, and some of the more expensive Surface Pro 4 keyboard has. So that's really, really nice. And everybody who went hands-on with it said they loved it, and it feels great. So my thoughts are really, really mixed. It's weird to unveil a $1,000 laptop, because that's what this starts at, while you're also unveiling Windows 10S targeted primarily at education. Like, middle schoolers aren't going to be walking around with Surface laptops. I don't like the name. I think the name is super lame. And it feels like they basically just took the Surface Pro 4 and said, what's the least amount of effort that we can take the Surface Pro 4 and shove it into a clamshell?
Oh, wow. Really?
That's absolutely what this feels like, because it's still the touchscreen and stuff, and it works with the pen, which pen, like, who cares? Who's writing on a pen on a laptop? I don't write on vertical surfaces. That's not going to work.
That is weird. That is really weird. And he even demonstrated that in the stage presentation, and I thought that was very strange.
Yeah, it's super weird. So it's Surface Pro 4 with you know, slightly upgraded internals, which I fully expect we're going to see a very, like, no event announcement similar to what Apple did with with their stuff recently to say, hey, we've upgraded the Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4 with the latest processors, and it's going to be the same thing that's in this stuff, in this Surface laptop. And they said, all right, we've got the Surface Pro 4. It's got a USB 3 port. It's got a mini display port, and it's got a headphone. Let's just turn this into a laptop, give it basically the same laptop that we've got in the Surface Book, and go. And that's not necessarily bad. It's still a really nice laptop, but, and it's actually cheaper. Like, if you were considering the Surface Pro 4, like we know it's cheaper than the Surface Book, but it's actually cheaper than a Surface Pro 4, because the Surface Pro 4 starts at $1,000 basically, and that doesn't include a keyboard. You're paying another $130 for the keyboard in that case. So it is even a little bit cheaper, but you don't have the full tablet usability that the Surface Pro 4 would give you. So that's it for the specs and all that stuff. This is available to pre-order now. It comes out June 15th. It starts at $1,000, like I said. During the presentation, Panos Panay said it can go up to a terabyte of storage. Not according to their website. It tops out at 512 gigs of storage. That's still a ton for SSD. I don't know, Richard. I'm very mixed on this. It's gorgeous, but it's not for me. I wouldn't be dropping $1,000 for this thing.
It's funny because I was drooling over it. I thought it was really cool. And I felt like, as a kind of take it with me kind of computer that I wouldn't use as my everyday driver, but that would be powerful enough to do things like editing and other general activities that I would work on. If I weren't a Mac person, I love this. I think this is a great computer. It's beautiful. It can be powerful. And the fact that it doesn't have ports, like I said, it's just kind of the way of life now. We're just dealing with the fact that people are eliminating ports. I thought this was very competitive. And so I'm interested to see how it does. Two things you didn't mention. Well, you did mention the fabric deck, which I think is really interesting. The fact that the deck surface is actually covered with fabric. I'm curious, after 4 years at college, what that's going to look like. But even more interestingly, there's no obvious speaker in this thing. And the way they're pulling that off is that the speaker is actually under the keys. How is that going to project sound to you as you're watching stuff? I need to see that in action in a Microsoft store to understand that better.
Yeah. I don't know. It's better than if the speakers were on the bottom, right? At least they're pointing up instead of down into the table.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but they're kind of obscured. I mean, you know, the whole thing with your speakers in, I don't know, anywhere in your home is that you don't want something between them and you to get in the way of the sound.
Yep. Agreed. But they're also laptop speakers. Like, I've got a MacBook Pro as my work laptop. The MacBook Pro is regarded as having pretty good speakers. I never use them. It's just like my phone speaker. I don't use the phone speaker. I'm not going to listen to music or anything that I care about through any of these things. So
yep,
it's just kind of icing on the cake.
Yep, I agree. All right. Well, so that was pretty much it for the major announcements at this thing. You know, the one thing that I want to mention, we kind of hinted at this. Terry Myerson, I've always given him a fair amount of grief about the fact that he's just not a good public speaker, and he just doesn't seem like your guy on stage. Well, man, I don't know what's going on with this guy. I think he went to extreme human makeover or something, because he has trimmed down. He looks fantastic. He sounds fantastic. And I think his presentation today was spot on.
Oh my gosh. It was exponentially better than any presentation he's ever given in his life. he was so much better today. Normally, when Terry Myerson walks on stage, I'm like,
right.
Really? This is going to suck. Not the case today. He really did great. And like you said, he looks phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, he has lost a ton of weight. He's, you know, not wearing a pullover shirt. I mean, he's right. He's really spiffed himself up for the responsibility that he has at this major company. So, you know, kudos to him. Also, I just, you know, Panos, man, that dude, he is unbelievable. He has the ability as a storyteller on stage to just draw you in and hook you with, and he does all the right stuff, right? Personal stories and sharing personal emotion and getting you fired up about things that you wouldn't even think about, like the lack of a screw in this particular position. And yet he is, I think, and this is crazy, you know, people might think I'm saying something offensive here. I think he is the Steve Jobs of the new age. He's the guy that kind of puts that, like, draws you in and sucks you into the story that he's telling about this thing that he's so passionate about. And I have great respect for that.
I agree. I was thinking the same thing, that he's very much like Steve Jobs, but I think in a more pleasant way, because it's so much about, like, a desire and love for the device. And yep. I don't know if you saw CNET's tweet today. This was the tweet of the day for me. CNET tweeted, I think I'm going to get this right. Find someone who loves you the way Panos Panay loves a laptop.
Like, wow.
Dude. Yeah. He is just amazing. Absolutely yep. amazing. All right. So that's it for all those people. Now, there was one little line that was just kind of said almost in passing during the presentation that really got me to perk up. And that was when they said, Spotify is coming to the Windows Store. Really?
Woohoo! You know what that really? Means? UWP.
Probably not. I really don't think that's going to be the case. Unfortunately, this is going to be a Project Centennial app, guys. This is going to be one of those UWP wrapper apps that we were talking about before. It's going to look exactly like the Spotify app that you already have on your Windows PC. It's just going to come from the store. And like, that's a little disappointing, of course, and I'll get into that in why in a moment. But at least they're doing something, because, you know, I'm very much considering getting one of these cheaper Windows 10S laptops for my oldest daughter. She wants a computer. I would like her to have something eventually. I don't want to have to be constantly managing it. So Windows 10S sounds great, but she uses Spotify, and if she wouldn't be able to install Spotify, that would really, really stink. So I'm glad that it's going to be there, but it's not going to be a UWP, and we should not be getting our hopes up that they're going to release a UWP version of Spotify anytime soon. And the thing that makes that the most disappointing for me, especially, and I think a lot of the people listening to the show, is Project Centennial apps, while they're in the store, they're never going to show up on your Xbox. Only UWPs run on your Xbox. So this doesn't mean that Spotify is coming to the Xbox. That's still not happening. And I did a little bit of digging on that, wondering if maybe there was some sort of agreement with Sony. There is. I totally missed this. But a couple of years ago, Spotify and Sony inked a deal so that the music experience on a PlayStation, it's called PlayStation Music, and all it is it downloads a Spotify app for your PlayStation. And it's some sort of timed exclusive, so it could end at some point. But right now, it's exclusive to Sony, so it ain't coming to the Xbox anytime soon. So don't get your hopes up yet, guys. Sorry.
Bummer.
Sorry to crush your dreams. All right, guys, we do the show live every week, but that's not always true. But every time we record the show live. And we're doing that using Microsoft's Beam streaming technology. You should come and check out the show live Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at DigiMediaZone to find out exactly when it's going to be, because sometimes we move days or times around. But Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern for the live show. Now, we've got a little bit of audio news here. Microsoft, in their latest Redstone 3 Insider preview release of Windows 10, has updated Microsoft Groove.
And it's big, huge changes, right?
Oh, massive changes. Not at all, actually. So recently we've talked a little bit about this new design language coming to Windows 10 called Neon. There's a little bit of neon-ish stuff coming in this version of the app. And all that really means is like on the plain screen and like the now plain screen and stuff like that, they're doing the whole like, here's album artwork and then a big blur effect over top of it. I think that's the only Project Neon sort of thing to this that I saw. They also are rebranding, or maybe just debranding, Your Groove. You probably remember us talking about Your Groove a few months ago. It's the ability to go into Groove and get a whole bunch of really cool customized playlists for you based on the music in your library. I really like this feature, but I've always thought that Your Groove was kind of a weird name. It's not called Your Groove in the hamburger menu anymore. Now it's just listed as recommended. I'm down with that. I'm cool with that. Let's not use weird names for things that don't need weird names.
I agree. And I use this as a sign. I would like to kind of just put a pin in the calendar on this day. This is the day where I'm starting the countdown for Microsoft to rename Microsoft Groove again to just Microsoft Music.
Mm.
Mark my words, it'll happen. Let's start counting.
You should put this in the notes so that if this happens, we can easily search and find the day that you predicted this.
Okay.
So do that while I move on to our gaming topics, which is not going to take us very long at all, because there's not much going on here as we're leading up to E3 in just about a month. So first off, real quick one, there's a new game. I think it comes out next week, or maybe it's tomorrow, or maybe it's today. I don't know. It's called Prey. It looks really, really cool. First person, single player action game, very deep story and all that stuff. I've never played any of the Prey games. And maybe you haven't either, so you're not really sure what to expect. Well, there's a demo. Like, we never see demos anymore, but there's a demo of Prey. It's the first hour of the game, and you can play it for free on your Xbox One. Next up, we've got a new Deals with Gold and Spotlight sale, and Capcom is the publisher for the publisher sale this week. And there's a lot of games in the sale this week, guys, but I had a really hard time wanting to pick even one title out of this list as a recommendation to buy. And partly because, you know, we had the sale at the end of the year, and then we recently had the spring sale, and like everything that was on this list that I would have considered recommending, it's been on sale recently. So you probably already have them, but you know, it's always worth checking out the list, but there's really nothing here that I wanted to make sure that you guys all knew was on sale. And then real quick, because now it's May, just a real quick update on what games you can get for free if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber. Continuing from last month, because of the wonkiness of Xbox One games and games with gold, you can still get The Walking Dead Season 2 up until May 15th. And then new this month on Xbox One is Gianna Sisters, or however you pronounce that, Twisted Dreams. Again, that's a platformer game. And then on the Xbox 360 side, Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2 until May 15th. Again, it's 360, but it's backwards compatible. So all three of these games can be played on an Xbox One.
And of course, I'm downloading all of them.
Of course you're downloading all of them. You'll never play any of them, but you're downloading all of them.
I know. It's the usual story. All right, moving on. We have, we sort of have mobile news. So I think folks know that I'm a big fan of Molly Wood's show Make Me Smart on Marketplace. And in this week's episode, they interviewed Satya Nadella. And Molly just came out and asked him the question, do you think you'll make any more phones? Like, I love that she just comes out with that. And he skirted answering the question for a while and eventually came back around to saying that he thinks that what we think of as a phone today is going to change, and that they'll make more phones, but they may not look like the phones that we have today.
Hmm.
Interesting statement. Very interesting statement. I think what that means is that a phone as a smartphone that might carry the Surface name or any other name for that matter is just not something we're going to see. And if they end up building phone capabilities into something, it's not going to be your typical smartphone. It's not what everybody is thinking.
So do you have any idea what this is? Because I've kind of heard this sort of thought before, but I just can't even imagine. And maybe that's why I'm not Steve Jobs, but I can't imagine what it would be.
Yeah, I don't know either. I really don't. And who knows? You know, Microsoft has lots of smart people that, just like Apple, just like Google, have labs where they do all kinds of experimentation and R&D, and they could have a variety of projects that they're pursuing, and they just aren't going to talk about it, but they know that there's enough future in these potential new form factors, maybe, that the traditional smartphone isn't something they're going to continue to pursue. This is all speculation, but I just thought that was a very interesting response to a just straight on question that could have been answered with yes or no.
You don't become CEO of a major company by giving just straight yes or no answers to difficult questions. That's not how it works. All right, Richard. Well, that does it for our news this week. If people want to find us, they should be subscribing to us. Like maybe they just found us on Beam tonight, which is awesome. And if so, open up your podcatcher, whether that's on your phone. Maybe it's an iPhone and you've got iTunes. Maybe it's an Android and you've got Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. We're all over the place. Look for Entertainment 2.0 and subscribe to us. And if you really like the show, you can do us a big favor by leaving us a rating, leaving us a review. It helps us a ton, guys, and we really, really appreciate it.
And I'm actually going to ask for another call to action here. I have seen two things happen in the last couple of weeks that kind of amazed me. We got a mention on two shows recently, Chord Killers, because I was on Chord Killers, and that was the show that I talked about primarily. Because that's the most relevant. And my friend Nate Langson, who hosts the show Text Message in the UK, also mentioned Entertainment 2.0, and we got a little bump on the site from that. So here's what that tells me. When people share information about the show with other people that they know, it really helps us out, which helps you out because it gets more visibility. And it allows us to do more. And so my request is that you tell someone, whether you retweet when we have a new episode out, or if you just let someone know that you know might be interested in the topics that we talk about. Let them know about Entertainment 2.0.
Great. Yeah, that's lovely. That would be even more appreciated. All right, Richard, we always like to end the show by talking about things that we're doing and watching in our entertainment centers. So what's going on in your entertainment center?
Like most weeks, let's start with Plex. And my DVR is once again not loading all data. So I haven't figured this out yet, but once again, I'm going to try to fix it by stopping all services, restarting the machine, loading everything up again, and see if that does the trick. By manually loading the guide data. I don't understand what's going on here. And the fact that other listeners, even in other countries, are identifying that they have the same problem suggests that there is some sort of service issue here from Plex. So if I can't figure this out in the next week or two, my next step is to reach out to Plex. I'm hoping that somebody from Plex might actually listen since they've been on the show and might, I don't know, have some ideas on how to solve this problem.
So why wait a couple weeks? Maybe you should just reach out right away.
Because I know that I can get through a couple weeks by restarting everything and manually reloading after the restart. That'll get me so far. And right now, I just don't have time to deal with it.
Okay.
All right. So the other thing that I got thinking about this week after listening to Dave McCabe's recent episode of Reset is that I don't think I'm handling media backups as well as I need to. And in particular, you know, like I'm not going to back up all of my recorded TV and movies and stuff like that. I can always get that again if I absolutely had to. But my personal media, stuff that I've created, like videos that I've produced or personal home movies or photos that I've taken or my music library, which is far more extensive than my video library, all of that, I really want good backups of that. And based on all the changes that I've made in the last couple of months, I'm very confident that my backup situation is inadequate. So I would actually suggest that people, if they haven't already listened to it, take a listen to the last episode, episode 22, called Mr. Backup. And that is a kind of in deference to a way that his family was pointedly suggesting that he should have been on top of this when he had some backup issues of his own. Really interesting episode.
Well, that's harsh when the dude who has been podcasting and blogging about podcasting for years,
yes,
has his own family tell him you're not backing up.
Yeah, because he lost some photos. And so he had to basically go figure out, okay, where in all of my transitions between media and locations and server versions and hosted services can I actually find the missing photographs? And it's harder than you might think. And, you know, we kind of hinted at this when we talked years ago about this concept of your digital photo legacy, like how things are changing so much that it's really hard to keep track of this stuff. Classic example of that. So keep this stuff backed up and make sure you know where your backups are. All right. On a lighter note, watching the usual stuff on television, last week I was complaining about Prison Break. It redeemed itself. Hopefully this week it will get better. It was much better last week, so I'm going to stick with it. I have been watching The Usual, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Designated Survivor, Hawaii Five-0, Amazing Race. The Flash and Arrow are back, and they were both entertaining. Better Call Saul is amazing. Jeez, I love that show. It is so good. And Fargo was very, very entertaining. I am so excited to continue to watch that season as it fleshes out. And as I mentioned previously, I've been watching this silly little show called Making History. It's a comedy about some folks that just time travel and I don't know, kind of have crazy fun. The last couple episodes I watched had to do with going back and like living the gangster life for a while. So it was interesting. I every once in a while need a half hour show that I can just kind of, you know, I just need something to fill in the gap when I don't have enough energy to get through a whole hour and I don't want to have to think too hard. Josh, how about you?
Yeah, when I have a half hour to kill, what I like to do is play a quick game of NHL 17. and on the gaming front, that's most of what I did. I didn't play a lot of games this week. Not nearly as many as I would have liked, I think. On the media, the other media consumption, the listening to things and watching things side, I did finish S-Town podcast last week, and I mentioned that I was close to finishing it last time. I liked it, and I would recommend it. But I gotta say, I'm a little frustrated because what I've realized about S-Town and about Serial and all the shows that those guys make, and I can never remember what NPR thing they're from, whatever. Every show they make, they're like, we've got this gripping story, and we don't write conclusions. Like, right, there are no conclusions.
But we're not going to end it in any way.
There's no ending, ever. But, like, how many books would be sold if there was no freaking ending? There's no ending ever. And I'm really getting kind of frustrated by it. Like,
okay.
There's no payoff. I need a payoff.
Yeah.
I might be done with these guys.
That's what I was worried about. This is what I asked you about last week. I don't want to get into this if I'm not going to get anything out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I don't recommend this. Don't listen to S-Town. Don't listen. Don't listen to Serial if that show ever comes back. Instead of telling friends about S-Town, tell friends about Entertainment 2.0.
Oh, I like that. That's a good idea.
That's much better. All right. The other thing that I did, and this was somewhat unnecessary, but I wanted to try it out. Sling TV has DVR functionality. I think it's $5 a month. It's an add-on. You have to pay for it. I don't really need this because I'm really using Sling for is to watch hockey, and I try to watch it live. But I wanted to give it a try. So, and the Penguins were playing, gosh, I don't know, Saturday night. I think it was Saturday night. I don't know. My I can't keep days straight anymore. They were playing some night that I wasn't sure I was going to make it home in time for the start of the game. And so I thought, I'll record it with Sling. So I'm like standing, you know, waiting for our table at a restaurant. And I'm on my phone. And I'm like, all right, I think I can add the DVR functionality. Yep. Add that, give them my $7 or whatever it was. Now I'm going to log into the app. I'm sure it'll be updated and I'll be able to set the game to record. Open up the app. The game wasn't on NBC Sports that night. It was on NBC, which obviously isn't in Sling TV. It's a local, you know, network.
Yeah.
No problem. I've got HD Home Run DVR. I've got Plex DVR. HD Home Run DVR, you can't access that unless you're using their app. You can't use the app if you're not on your home network. Plex DVR, well, I've got a Plex app on my phone, but Plex DVR can only be controlled by the web browser.
Yep.
So I basically just tried to rush home and I missed some of the game. So that kind of stunk, but I did use Sling TV DVR for last night's game because I, again, wasn't sure if I would be home for the start of it. Set it to record, put the kids to bed, came down, you know, definitely after the start of the game, fired up my Xbox One, opened up the Sling app. I couldn't find anything in there.
What?
About DVR'd recordings. There was nothing. There's a guide section, of course, but there's nothing in the guide about my DVR. There's a section on the home screen called My TV. Seems like a great place for DVR content to show up. Nope. It's not there either. Tonight, I went through and thought maybe NBC Sports doesn't actually support DVR in. Maybe you can't view something that's been DVR'd until it's done recording. Let's try to record something else. So I went through like a dozen channels and tried to set something to record through the Xbox One tonight. It's not available. The Xbox One app does not support DVR. It's not there.
Wow.
Yeah. So I tried on my Windows 10 PC, the Windows 10 app, figuring it's probably not going to be there, but let's check. Yeah, it's not there either. It's on my Android phone. I fire up the Android version of the Sling app, and right there on the home screen is, you know, my latest recordings. Sling TV is really, really starting to disappoint me. I mean, I'm getting to watch hockey, but this experience, it's nowhere near the experience that I had with Windows Media Center. That is for sure. And you know, last week I talked about the video quality of Sling TV. And then, like I said, the game that was on this weekend was on NBC. I turned it on NBC and was like, oh my gosh, this looks amazing. Like, it was like going to a 4K broadcast from standard def. Like, it looked so much better coming over the air than anything that I get over Sling TV.
Yeah. You know, this just really makes me want to run out and get Sling TV. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Not necessarily recommended if you care about video quality or really well-functioning DVR.
No. Hey, I have a trick for you. Next time you're away from home and you need to control your Plex DVR, you can actually log into your Plex server through the web interface remotely through their hosted web service. So anybody that's interested in trying this out, if you're remote and you want your web interface to your Plex server, you can log in with your Plex account at plex.tv/web. And that gives you full access to the web interface for your server. We'll have that link in the show notes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think about that. Maybe I did and just thought, yeah, there's no way that there's a mobile interface that's going to support the DVR stuff. I bet it's only on the desktop web interface. So I gave up. Or maybe we just got our seat. I don't know, but it didn't work regardless. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this week. If you want to find us on Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. Did I say all that too fast? Are you listening at 2x and you couldn't get those Twitter handles? It's okay. It's in the show notes. Go to the website. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/theDMZ. We've got Richard's other show, and I know he's really excited to talk about this one. It's a show called Home On, talking about smart devices and how smart they are, right, Richard?
No, talking about how dumb they can be. And I know I've teased this for a couple of weeks now. I had so much fun with Molly Wood on the last episode of Home On. While I was editing this, I was laughing so hard, I was tearing up. It was such a fun episode. I hope the listeners enjoy it. And I don't know if you know this or not, Josh, but up to now, the quickest take on any new episode, meaning the fastest we've had downloads of any new episode, was the episode you and I did at the most recent CES. And really? This is quickly coming up on knocking that out.
I'm not surprised.
If you have a chance, check that out. Coming up next, I'm expecting that I'm going to be releasing the episode that I did with Anova, talking specifically about connected kitchen appliances and what manufacturers in that space need to be thinking about. I have other interviews with folks like Stacey Higginbotham and an analyst in that space also weighing in.
Nice. Very nice. So that's Home On. You can find it right here at thedigitalmediazone.com. And then one more quick plug for the live show. We do this live. You can watch us. You can hear us live while we record the show. And you can chat back with us and contribute to the show that way. It's a lot of fun for us. And I think it's a lot of fun for you guys too. Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. But follow us on Twitter to know for sure. Unfortunately, but probably not next week. I'm going to be traveling. Richard might be traveling because light bulbs. And yeah, I mean, you don't really need to say anything else, right?
A conference about light bulbs.
Yeah, just crazy. Richard, like, I'm surprised that Richard isn't the keynote speaker at a conference about light bulbs. Someday it'll happen. Someday, for sure. But that's going to do it for episode 406. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time in a couple of weeks for episode 407. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.